You're listening to Face Off, episode 27, recorded July 25th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we'd like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com or follow us by going to twitter.com/faceoffshow.
You got it right this time.
Yeah, I got it right this time.
I usually do, but
it's a mouthful. It's a warm summer day here in Bozeman, Montana, I tell you what.
It's very warm.
We're going to be sweaty messes by the end of this show because it's like 90. It's been hitting like upper 90s and it's melting me. I'm kind of a bigger guy with a lot of facial hair, so I get warm pretty easily. But
it's very warm.
But we're going to plow through because Face Off Show must go on. So let's get into our follow-ups. We actually have quite a few news and follow-ups this week. And
yeah, the first ones I'm very excited about.
Yeah, we're super pumped. Face Off now has a phone number. And not really so much a phone number, but we have a voicemail account so that people can call in and leave suggestions or ask us questions, and we can, you know, play it on the air and answer it. So yeah.
We probably won't answer it, but... You know, if you want to leave a message, just go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And so the number is actually, we were actually, thank Google Voice for this, because we got a Google Voice account, is how we got the number.
Right.
31 Web, the number 2, Tech.
So that is 319-322-8324.
Yeah.
Or, like you said, 31 Web, the number 2, Tech.
Yep. So it's, you know, we're clever guys with our phone numbers. But yeah, seriously. So anyone want to call that and, you know, leave a voicemail with, you know, questions that you may get on the next show. So,
yeah, if you got a question or something, we might be able to answer it. We'll throw it on the show and answer it.
Yeah. So, I mean,
or if you just got a comment, say, hey, you know, I hate the show or the show is awesome. Just call that number and leave the message.
Yeah. We'd like any sort of feedback. So, but yeah, so we've been waiting for a phone number or a way for people to easily leave us audio comments or suggestions for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, people would have to, you know, record an email, an MP3 or something, and not everybody has a mic set up and you know, configured properly, and this just easy to get, you know, call with any phone and just start talking.
We're talking about this. It's almost like if you're recording, if you have a really, you know, shoddy mic, it's, you know, it's really bad, but people just accept that any phone quality is going to be crap.
Right.
So if you're like, well, here we're going to play voicemail, people immediately go, okay, well, it's going to sound like crap, so yeah. That's okay.
It's not like we're going to play a 15-minute call or something. It's going to be a short time, but yeah.
So give us a call. Let us know.
So once again, that 31 Web, the number 2 in Tech.
The next follow-up we have is, I should have looked up what episode this was, but we talked about multi-factor authentication a while ago. So multi-factor authentication, there's several factors to authentication. I think three are the big ones. There's like, you know, what you are, what you know, and what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about things like YubiKey
and the PayPal secure key.
As a way to, you know, if you mix this with a username and this other factor, you have what's called multi-factor authentication, which is really helpful because you basically can give one person one of your factors of authentication, and without the other one, they can't do it.
Yep. We talked about multi-factor authentication on episode 7. So if you want a refresher on what it is and how to get one, either, you know, the VeriSign secure key or OpenID with YubiKey, check out episode 7.
Seems so long ago.
So we got this new tool. Mm-hmm. What is that new tool?
So it's called Passwindow, and it was actually on some ABC television show about inventions or something.
An Australian fellow?
Yeah, he's an Australian fellow. And what this is, it's like a thing that you keep in your wallet, but what it is sort of this clear window with kind of these markings on it that look similar to like a digital clock or a calculator.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you do is when you go to log in, it displays, the screen displays sort of the same kind of pattern. And
your computer screen.
Yeah, your computer screen. And so then what you do is you overlay this little clear window on top of it. And when you overlay it, it will make a combination of numbers.
Okay, so kind of like the old things, you know, as a kid, you got the red color and you put the red color over the scrambled
mess, exactly.
And it just shows the blue color or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's like basically like a bunch of little blue dots intermixed with a bunch of red dots. And so it looks like you can't really read it until you put like a red lens up to it, and then you're like, oh.
So this is kind of like an overlay that you put on some kind of a number scheme, and it'll show you numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It fills in the missing parts of the numbers.
Yeah, and hopefully it's you know, obfuscated and kind of random enough that you wouldn't be able to figure out what numbers it is. Looking at the device, there's almost like these little triangles at the top, so I think, you know, there's different sort of areas that you can lay it over.
Ah, so you can shift it.
Yeah, so it's kind of shifted. You can slide it. So, you know, it adds an extra sort of layer of obfuscation to it. But,
You know, and when we talked about multi-factor authentication in episode 7, we discussed that it doesn't have to be necessarily super, you know, complex.
Yeah.
Even, you know, the length from your hand is good enough, because the chances that somebody that has your ID or your password or whatever and has the same hand length is going to be, the odds are going to be low.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be like 20 characters long.
Yeah.
It only needs to be like in the PayPal security key. It's like what, 6 digits?
Yeah.
So
like the PayPal security key, it has a battery that will eventually run out. I mean, the odds that you'll run it out are, you know, in your sort of average lifetime are low, but it does have a battery. It is kind of thick and inconvenient to keep around. The YubiKey does a better job because it's pretty small. It fits really well on your keychain, but it's still like kind of a thing. This literally slips in your wallet. It's as thin as paper.
Is cheap too.
Yes. Yeah, well, this is a little
opaque window with some print on it.
Yeah.
It almost looks like a broken watch, like where the digits only show you know, half the
digit. Or when something gets screwed up in your calculator as a kid and you type the numbers and it's just kind of all jumbled up. But yeah, exactly. So
then you just overlay this little transparent window over some other little broken looking clock things and it shows a number.
Yeah, it makes a working clock. So
it's
clock
a really
thing.
Cheap. I like it's very innovative and it's very, you know, easy, obviously cheap to make. You could implement this into an existing credit card. You just make part of the credit card translucent.
Yeah. The reason the PayPal one was so cheap, as in cheap, you know, $5, which is kind of cheap, but not, is because it's subsidized by PayPal.
I mean,
if you buy them directly from VeriSign, they're, what, $15, $20?
Like $25, I think.
Yeah. And if you get the one that's credit card sized, it's like
$40
or $50. Yeah. It's really expensive. So this is really cool, cheap. And just like what we've talked about earlier, is just the more things that have multi-factor authentication, the more secure they are. So, you know, banks, this would be a really easy way for a bank to do it without really a whole lot on the back end even. You know, it's just spit out these kind of random characters and send out these really cheap cards, and you just have to mark, you know, who has which card.
So yeah, it's very creative on how they did that with no battery. There's no incrementing system or anything. It's just like it's like a piece of the puzzle if the person has
exactly this. and they're so cheap that, you know, if you lose it, it's cheap and quick to replace. If you feel like, you know, it's not secure or something, again, it's really cheap for a company to send one out to you. You know, you could even print these at home on your inkjet printer with like what are those overheads? Like overhead stuff? I mean, you could...
Translucent
plastic
or something.
Yeah. I mean, you could even do it because, you know,
you can even make your own. Yeah,
you could.
It's a good point.
It's pretty cool. The link is in the show notes. There's like a little video about the guy. He's Australian, and I think he says dodgy several times. So.
I thought it was... but I liked it because I thought it was just a great way and cheap. It's a new way of thinking about it. So it was a good...
Exactly. Yeah, we're trying to think... Good. The current trend is kind of think of smaller electronic devices that can do things, but this is great. You know,
it basically gets the same job done without a big algorithm and a battery.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. So check it out, Passwindow. I hope to see banks and credit unions and credit card companies. Actually, this is really funny. My credit card company just recently, I was with Washington Mutual, which got bought out by Chase.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if Chase has been doing this for a while, but as soon as I got, as soon as they merged and they consolidated my accounts, my bank or that credit card company uses multi-factor authentication through the cell phone. So if I log into a computer that I have not logged into before, it has to send a verification code either to my email address or a text message to my phone before I can log in from that computer.
I've seen that before. That's a nice feature.
Yeah. Again, that's another really good way to do multi-factor authentication, because everyone already has cell phones. Everyone already has an email.
Right.
You know, but it gets into hairy thoughts if you think of, what if I need multi-factor authentication to get into my email, which has my multi-factor authentication key?
Yeah.
But the more, especially things like banks and stuff, they need to implement this stuff as fast as possible.
Yeah, I mean, World of Warcraft has it, and banks don't.
All right, let's move on to our next follow-up, which is in episode 19, we talked about Tabloid, which was an HP product that took like an RSS feed and made it look like a newspaper. It kind of laid it out, and then you could print it off and read it, and it kind of made it look like a newspaper layout. Well, we found one that does that, but this is the cool part, is it's open source.
Yeah, you know, if we find something that's open source and it does the same thing, I like that.
Yeah. So this is, it's at fivefilters.org. Where is...
So, I mean, yeah. So basically what this does is it takes an RSS feed and puts it into a PDF.
Yeah, it's called PDF layout. Newspaper at fivefilters.org. And yeah, so you just, you know, you can give it a URL, an RSS feed URL, or like an OPML URL, which is like OPML, sort of this consolidation format where within one file you have basically links to multiple RSS feeds so that you can, you know, like with this, you could give it your OPML and it would make a newspaper of all your different RSS feeds mixed together.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's different from this one, I guess, is it's open source. So you could actually implement this and expand upon it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can hack at it. You can customize it how you want. We thought, you know, this would be a great way to implement something into your website. So if you do like a weekly newsletter, if you want to do like a PDF weekly newsletter, you could just give it your RSS feed, let it digest it, get a PDF, and then email it out all to all your clients.
Yeah, like once a month, just round up a bunch of posts and
yeah,
PDF totally. It off.
So, and it uses like PDF, or I mean, obviously, yeah. It uses like PD,
all the open source technologies to create it. So, yes,
I can't speak today. PHP, it's written in PHP. It uses things like, looks like you use Smarty and then a couple other open source packages. But yeah, PHP server, if you have it, you know, if you have a LAMP server, throw it on it, you can use it and, you know, change it and hack it how you want it to your liking.
Actually, SimplePy is the RSS reader it uses, and we talked about SimplePy in the other one.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Tabloid?
No, for an RSS parser for PHP.
Yeah, you're right. We did an article about like good PHP tools or something like that. So, you know, some of the things that they're trying to do, you know, they're going to try and do like some ink saving templates that use less ink. You know, you can. Other languages and stuff. So it's cool. It's an open source app. I'm going to keep my eye on it because I kind of like the concept of taking an RSS feed and making it look like a newspaper so I can print it off and read it.
The RSS, the one that we were thinking about was SimplePy.
Yeah.
There was MagPie and then SimplePy.
Oh yeah. There's MagPie. I forgot about that.
And then this one uses, SimplePy actually. The one we were talking about. All right.
So check it out, fivefilters.org/PDF-newspaper. Cool little project. I'm glad we found it. The next thing we want to talk about is in episode 24, we talked about a web app called Noam, which you put in your desired username, and it goes out to a bunch of different sort of social websites and whatnot and checks to see if that username is taken or not.
Right.
So we have a follow-up because we found another one that does the exact same thing, but with a couple more features and, to be honest, a little nicer user interface. And it's called friendscall.me. So like the whole point is like, you know, friends call me Jade Robbins. And you can go and see. It doesn't look like one has more services than the other. They both have quite a few things. I did notice that Noam was a little faster. It was a little faster at detecting whether or not username was available. This one kind of chunks through it eventually.
You know what I like about this one is it actually groups things. Like, here's the popular ones. Like, here's the one you should actually care about. And then if you want these other ones, you know. But it does break it down. Like, we've got photo versus blogging versus video film versus design, food and drink.
Yeah.
So you might not be interested.
If you're a photographer, you probably want to make sure that you have that username for each of them in that category. You're really more protective of that category than others.
Yeah, like versus Noam, you just have this big lump of all these different services, and if you don't know what those services do or about, you kind of get lost in the mess.
Yeah, exactly. And then another really cool thing about this is if you do... you can sign up so that as they add new services, it notifies you so that you can hurry up and go grab your username before someone else does. Which I thought of what if one day this podcast took off and we had, you know, 60,000 listeners across the earth, you know, and I was like, man, like Leo Laporte, right? He probably has a hard time getting Leo Laporte at every service because there's always going to be some squatter jerk or something, you know?
Yeah, I've heard him talk about identity problems he's got with people that pretend to be him, and he has to use things like new privacy guard to protect his emails and certain things.
Yeah, exactly. So... That would suck. But again, so you could sign up for something like this, and when you know that service, a new service comes up, then boom, you know, throw yourself into it.
Okay, so it does the popular ones first, and then you got to check this category.
It filters through. But if you want to check a specific category,
I see.
Yeah. Okay. So the popular ones, it'll filter through. But yeah, if you want to check each of them in that category, you can, which is nice.
So pretty much the same thing, but you know, we wanted to do a follow up and say there was other ones out there that do the same thing.
The honest truth is this one has a nicer theme too. It's a lot cuter on the eyes and stuff. So friendscall.me.
Okay, so those were our follow ups, and now we're going to get into the web apps.
All right.
For this episode.
All right, so the first one we're going to talk about is called My Boneyard. And what My Boneyard is, it's a service to recycle your electronics.
Okay.
But there's kind of a catch. Some of your electronics, you can actually get a reward for recycling. Like if it's something that's in demand still in other places that they can, I think, turn around and sell and get money for, they'll give you a particular amount of money for what it's worth. But even if it isn't worth any money, they'll still recycle it for you.
So if I got some old junky computers laying around that I just don't feel like hauling off somewhere, you can just, how does it work?
Well, you just kind of go in and it's like, so what do you want to recycle? And so there's like basic categories, that they have right now. Let me load it up. Like, you know, your desktop system, your cell phone, your laptop, camcorders, cameras, GPS, game systems, things like that. So, like, I have an old MP3 player. I was thinking, you know, so I'll select it and I tell, you know, what brand it is, what kind of cosmetic shape is it in, you know, is the screen broken, is it not? And then it'll kind of look at it based on what you told it and let you know if you can get money for it.
Okay. So how do we get it to them?
Well, this is the great part, is they do all the shipping for you, which for some of these things is the really expensive part.
Yeah, like a monitor.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
Yeah, exactly.
All, some of these older computers are like made with steel cases. They're like really heavy.
Yeah, so I mean, so this is really good for someone like me because I have a lot of old electronics that I don't use anymore and I don't really want to throw away because I feel guilty because there are people out there that would like to use them. And plus, we have like local electronic recycling drives here in Bolton like once a year. And they're really busy. And so like they tend to fill up really quick and then they stop taking donations because it does cost money to recycle electronics. But what's cool about these guys is they don't just only strictly recycle it. If they can, you know, sell it at a third, you know, some market overseas or something, they'll do that too. And that's usually where you get your money, is if it's something they can sell.
Then you're contributing to a good cause. You're getting it out of your house and somebody else is getting use out of it.
It's not just going in a landfill, especially if it's still useful. I mean, that's the big thing. I have a lot of older things that I take care of my electronics. And so they're just old, but they're not, I have something, I've replaced them already, but they might still be useful to someone, but I don't know who.
So can I find out if it's going to be worth money, an actual monetary value before I send it to them?
Yeah.
Or is it kind of like you send it to them and they just...
Well, they do both. Like, so if it's a device that they don't have a record of, you can send it to them. And if it's worth something, they'll let you know. A lot of people don't like that because they feel like, you know, they'll get screwed or something. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's not worth anything. And then they'll go sell for, you know, but
right.
Most popular devices they have on there and they'll let you know whether or not they're worth money.
So it looks like for the shipping wise, you can just go in there and print a label right on their website mm-hmm. and then just, you know, tape it to the box and away you go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you still have to pack it and whatnot.
Right. But it looks like they use UPS for the larger items and then the Postal Service for the smaller stuff, like the MP3 players. Yeah.
And like bigger items, they make you actually take it to like a UPS store to ship and stuff so that it's packed properly. So they don't pay for shipping on a CRT monitor that arrives shattered.
Yeah.
So, you know, check it out. It's myboneyard.com. It's just a good way to get rid of some of your older stuff without having to throw it in the garbage or hunt around to figure out, you know, to find someone to take it off your hands that, you know, may or may not use it. Like, I mean, I'm lucky I have a couple young nephews. So like, you know, little MP3 players and stuff I can give to them, but you know, there might be other people out there that want it more. And as they get older, they'll probably want newer stuff that isn't quite as old. But
so a lot of times when somebody donates a computer, they're kind of worried because a lot of people do kind of tax things on their computer and personal, you know, files. And, you know, me and you know of some tools to, you know, erase, format the drive, make mm-hmm. sure it's not really readable. they actually will do that for you. If you forget or you don't know how, you can just send it into them and they'll erase stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's a nice service.
Yeah, because you can. You could. There's potential to get in trouble that way. Like you said, if you have tax documents or something on your computer.
But yeah, I mean, it looks like a nice way to just get rid of some stuff and maybe donate to somebody that could get some use out of it.
Well, yeah, like cell phones. You know, like a lot of times they give them to women at battered wife shelters and stuff like that because, you know, or if someone's stalking them, like their like their husband that beat them or something, they like have a way to call the police and stuff. Yeah, so, you know, there's good causes out there, but this will, they'll take a lot of stuff. They'll take empathy, you know. I don't even know what they do when they get the stuff, but, you know, even if they went to, like, kids in a hospital with, you know, chronic diseases, and if my MP3 player would be something fun for that kid to keep them occupied while they're sitting in the hospital for months, that's a cool thing, you know? So, I don't know. I would check out for, like, local charities to donate your stuff to first, but then, you know, if you can't, like, you know, I live in Bozeman, which is a very tech-savvy town, so I can't, you know, I can't sell an older MP3 player because no one wants it. They all want the new stuff because it's a town that has a lot of tech savvy people who want the new thing. But, you know, there are places out there that aren't quite as bountiful as Bozeman, Montana is.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Just type in your product and get a shipping label and away you go.
Print it off, slap it to the box, yep. Throw it in the mail.
So that's My Boneyard.
Pretty cool. The next web app we want to talk about, it's a pretty simple, quick one. It's called PDF to Word.
I know what you're thinking, you know, how good can this be? Because, you know, PDFs are, they're final end documents. They're almost like basically just an image.
Yeah.
They're not made to be edited. They're not made to be, you know, reformatted or anything. They are what they are.
Yeah. And typically, if someone doesn't know what they're doing when they create the PDF, so there are some people that know what they're doing and they'll make the PDF editable with fields and stuff so you can fill out a form. And but if they don't know to do that, then, you know, you get a PDF and you're like, oh, I just don't want to print this out and fill it out and send it in. I just want to type it on my computer and send it in.
Or sometimes you'll find a document and you're like, man, I wish I had this in a Word document because I just need to change some dates or some goofy stuff. And then, you know, like a business document or something, you know, you just want to change a few dates and then, you know, maybe you'll just turn it right back into a PDF and then print it.
Yeah.
Well, PDF to Word is really simple. You just upload your PDF. Pick either a doc format or RTF and email address to send the file. And it is absolutely amazing. I was so impressed by this.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know, I would be happy if it just converted the text because I was willing to just copy and paste the text, reformat the text, you know, whether it needs to be tabbed over or bulleted lists or, I mean, we took a W-2 form, uploaded it, and it had the table structure. Yeah. It was absolutely amazing.
It imported the images in the right spot and everything. I was really impressed.
It's almost like it just literally just transforms it back to Word, which is a miracle. Yeah. So I was really impressed with it. I've tried other services and it doesn't come anywhere close to this one. So I wanted to let people know if they do have a PDF where they're like, I just want to change a few little things, this might be where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about a while ago an online convergence site called Zamzar. So we decided to kind of do a head-to-head because we're like, well, Zamzar says that it can, well, it has the option to say, here's a PDF, convert it to Word. And it actually kind of gave up and said no, honest.
Yeah.
We got an email saying they couldn't do it. So we were going to try and compare them head-to-head to see which one converted better, but Zamzar couldn't convert it. So we kind of said, oh, this guy went. And once we saw the Word document that they spit out from the W-2, I was very impressed. I mean, it was good.
I've looked into even the professional Adobe Acrobat, you know, it would take hours to re-edit some of these PDFs.
Yeah, and that's going
to
be...
You have to do stuff like paste the text on top of the old text and a bunch of weird stuff. This thing, I mean, it's not 100%. You might not get the exact same font and everything, but it is awesome. It's impressive.
Pretty clever. I was very impressed. And you can also convert to just straight rich text if you don't want all the formatting and stuff too. So PDF2Word.com. You know, it's funny. In the business world, I've had people ask me how to do this several times, and I've always said there's not a way.
Yeah, it's not a good way, but now there is.
Yeah.
I was impressed. So.
Yeah, and it's perfect for just, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know how many times, especially, I work at Montana State, and so there's all kinds of PDF forms up, and so they're like, oh, here's this form for this payroll thing, and I'm like, okay, and I fire it up in Adobe Reader so I can fill it out, and I can't, you know, But be forewarned, it does depend on the creation of the PDF. Now, sometimes when you scan things and then scan them as a PDF, it doesn't do OCR or anything like that. And the PDF literally is one giant image. Well, this won't help. I don't think it OCRs. So, I mean, be forewarned. But, like, if you can go into the PDF and select the text, like, in Adobe Reader, then it knows that it's text. This can take care of it.
As long as it's not a giant image, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If it's a giant, basically, JPEG scan of a image that they just, in turn, you know, made into a PDF, it won't
probably
work.
Yeah, probably wouldn't.
So, that is PDF to Word.
The next web app we have is Cardly.
Yeah, so it's funny. I kind of had an idea for this a while ago. Again, another one of my, I like to say, my
this was my idea. They stole it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so I thought, wouldn't it be great if you had a website? I mean, I use like FriendFeed, which kind of does something similar and all this, but wouldn't it be great if there's just a website where that was easy to remember, where people could just go and get my contact information and some stuff about me. And to be honest, I kind of do. I have jaderobbins.com. Okay, that's great. But a lot of people don't have a website. And so what something like Cardly is basically a small URL that you can tell people where they can go and get all the information they need about you.
Okay.
It's like an e-business card, they kind of say. So if you go to card.ly/jaderobbins, you can log in there and you can see, you know, there's a link to my Delicious profile, Facebook, FriendFeed, Google, LinkedIn. They have tons of services. You can even add custom ones if they don't have them built in already. You can go to like the about information to, you know, read my little bio or get contact information about me. Or even at the end, they have sort of a stream, which is where they kind of aggregate all the different services that I added and, you know, put it in kind of this live stream for people to check out.
So, I mean, it looks like you have the same username because maybe you use Noam or one of them apps.
Yeah.
But, you know, this would be really helpful if you had, like, a different username on Dig versus Delicious versus Facebook, you know?
Yeah. Yes, you. I mean, you and I use other services, like the one we talked about earlier, that so we can get a unified username across all these things. Well, some people can't. Like, if your name is Joe Smith, you know, it's going to be really hard to get /Joe Smith at everything. So Your stuff is going to be kind of scattered about. Well, you can use something like Cardly so people can come and get all your stuff and figure out who you are.
Yeah, it would show the username on each one of these. You just click on it and it goes right to the user profile page and
yeah,
away and you go.
This is a lot like FriendFeed, but FriendFeed is kind of focusing more towards social stuff now, using, you know, discussions and stuff. Plus, I know they just, or not just, but they added themes, but FriendFeed I always thought was just a little kind of ugly. These guys have some really, really pretty themes that you can pick, and they even have a premium account, which is like $25 a year, so that you can get rid of the little powered by Cardly thing, and get, you know, a couple other small enhancements and stuff. But, you know,
they support Twitter, Vimeo, Dig, YouTube, Blogger, Facebook, all those, you know, yeah. Flickr.
Yeah, exactly.
Delicious WordPress.
And even if they have services you don't, like I said, you can add one that is supported and say, yeah, exactly. So like, let's say, you know, I could be like, my Montana Fragfest username is Proximity.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's very simple.
It's very simple. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, it's a little web app that someone could have written really quick. If you make it pretty and nice, then people will look. I mean, I like looking at it. It's not quite as plain as other things out there, and it's easy to remember.
Do they have a monetization? Do they have like a premium account or anything like that?
Yeah. They have a premium account that gets you, you know, you can remove the powered by Cardly. You can get the, like they'll remove the no follow tag from the links and stuff. So it kind of help your SEO out. Yeah.
Cool.
It's like, you know, $25 a year or $3 a month if you want to go month to month.
Cool.
So that is Cardly. Some good, quick little web apps this week. Nothing too in depth, but helpful nonetheless.
That was a nice one though. You could just say Cardly/Mark Sanborn or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to see my online presence.
Once again, you are smiting the Mark Sanborn public speaker as much as humanly possible.
I'm gonna get that name before he does. I'm gonna use that Noam and that friends call me or whatever. And I'm gonna get them all.
You're hardcore. He has to be cursing your name every day. So.
Okay.
All right. So let's get into our first topic. We're gonna try and get through both of our topics this week. The first one is was a Smashing Magazine article that we found that was, you know, a roadmap to becoming a professional freelance web designer.
Yeah, and this article is just laid out to like encompass pretty much everything that's involved in becoming a freelance web designer. The first one, do the necessary research. We talked about market research and how you're finding your target market, finding out what you need to start up, finding out what it's going to entail.
Yeah. Yeah. The article specifically talks about like researching the cost, like how much is it going to cost? You know, something you and I were talking about last night is how much it costs to register as a corporation or an LLC in your various states. It depends. Also, there's costs like for if you're going to use a service to create those papers, or if you're going to hire a lawyer, decide what you need, plan ahead.
If you need any software, you know, Adobe Photoshop or any of the mm-hmm. designer software.
Research your taxes and insurance. You know, depending upon the business, you may need insurance. Some small ones don't. You know, some of them you just take the risk and say, well, if something bad happens, I'll just go bankrupt. So that's another reason why you might want to do an LLC or an S corp, is so that, you know, if something does happen like that, you're not held personally liable. Or if you want to do a sole proprietorship, get some insurance. I'm sure for a small business, you can get pretty cheap liability insurance or something, you know, general insurance for things like that. And also research the time. That's the other thing. You need to make sure that you're going to have plenty of time to also be an entrepreneur and live your life, you know. Assuming you're going to spend 24 hours, you know, if you do the time constraints out and realize that you'd have to work 24 hours a day to do it, well, that's not feasible. You can't do that.
So. Right. Number two, become a brand. What's in a name? Are you going to use your Jade Robbins like you don't often use? Or are you going to go big and do something like Base6 Design or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that way you can grow. You can hire people. You can start an enterprise, you know, where you don't have to do all the work because it's not branded towards your name.
Yeah, it's true. But you can go either way.
You can go either way, right.
You know, some people, let's say if you have some already, you know, you and I kind of have some brand recognition ourselves already, so we may want to incorporate that into our, you know, if we went to a freelance web design business, because we, that, you know, that kind of, they would coincide well for both of us. But it's, again, it's your choice. Like sometimes if you do one that is, you know, isn't your name, it kind of makes you sound like you're a much more larger business. If you're like, you know, Basic Studios instead of Mark Sanborn,
right,
it kind of sounds like you have
a bigger
you have more people working. Yeah, it kind of gives you a little more credibility, but again, don't, you know, advertise what you're not. At the same time,
part of building that brand then is also having a nice logo.
Yep,
the logo tells a lot about your business. Not only just, you know, represents the name or the icon, but also the entire business as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah, it tells you a lot about your business. Like if you have, you know, some of the logos they have here in this article, like one is Kaboom. You know, it's like a fun logo. You can tell that they're probably a little more relaxed. And if you're trying to do some stuff, you know, geared towards young social media things, these guys might be the one to do. Now, a logo can also convey that we're a very professional, conventional company that will give you, you know, very very good, solid, long-term stuff, you know, or can convey price too. Kaboom, looks a little cheaper maybe because they're a little more flexible and fun, whereas another one looks like it might be professional and a little more pricey. So really look at your logo.
The next part about building your brand is being able to talk about it. And oftentimes entrepreneurs suggest making like an elevator pitch. If you only have 30 seconds to tell somebody about what you are, what your business encompasses, you need to have something prepared.
Yeah.
Something upfront, something that you already know and you don't have to think about, and you can just roll off the tip of your tongue.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even our intro to the show every week could be a small elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. Or we also have a little blurb on our website that is very similar.
A little bit longer version.
Yeah, very similar to an elevator pitch. So, yeah, exactly. You need to... And you need to be able to tell people what's going to make you unique, but it also needs to be short. You know, that's the whole point of an elevator pitch, is you're in an elevator going up with someone and you only have so long to tell them what you do and why they should be interested in your company. So
they recommend here about 30 seconds or 100 to 150 words.
Yeah. So definitely.
I would suggest when we did the Pro Blogger Challenge, he suggested doing a short one, like one or two sentences, something that just this is us. Uh-huh. And then a little bit longer one.
Yeah, like so if someone's at a party and they're like, oh, hey, Mark, what do you do? You'd be like, hey, I am a host for a web technology podcast. You know, one sentence, that's good and short. And right. then if they want to hear more, you're like, oh, well, we focus on, you know, social media, web entrepreneurship, you know.
Like ours is kind of like, the face-off one's kind of like your face-to-face web technology podcast.
Yeah.
And then our, you know, longer one is the one that you hear at the intro of the show.
Exactly.
A little bit longer, so. The next one, an overall style.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, it encompasses everything. It encompasses your elevator pitch. It encompasses your logo. It encompasses your environment in which you work in, you know. So you don't want to have, like we said earlier, a really goofy kind of fun logo that, but not have your business culture follow. You know, right. people are going to be expecting a certain thing. And so you need to create it, you know, an overall style, but I would say an overall culture.
Yeah, some consistency.
Yeah, a consistent culture throughout your organization, which may just be you, but everything should. So, you know, if you're really, really serious and you show up with, you know, a MacBook with a bunch of stickers that maybe have, you know, some semi-inappropriate things on them, that's inconsistent.
Number three, create a portfolio website. So, you know, people that are going to want to do work with you are obviously going to want to see what you've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the best way to find out, you know, how well you can design.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a good way for them to see, you know, what work you've done. They can also, you know, if you're doing a portfolio for, you know, your overall web work, they can actually go visit the site and make sure that things are functional, make sure, you know, see kind of how you've done things. The big important thing, obviously, is you need to have a contact form and you... because people need to figure out how to get a hold of you if they want to do business with
right.
you.
And you make the things that are important stand out, like who you are, what you've done in the past, a contact form, you know, and then maybe your how long you've been doing it or something. A little bit about you.
Yeah, don't, you know, yeah, if it's not important, I mean, imagine that you're someone going to your website and, you know, you have a whatever by whatever 100 screen and that's the first impression of you they get. What will they see and what can they do?
Yep.
So the fourth step is to build legal documents. And we've been researching this a little bit.
We had that site DocStock where you can go get a bunch of legal documents.
Exactly.
In this article, they suggest, you know, having some contracts and stuff built up before you actually need to have them. And that way, you know, you have them ready to go instead of having to, you know, I got to make this contract right now.
Because yeah, exactly. You know. If you do it quick like that, you'll probably miss things that will come back to bite you. We talked about how to make a successful web contract in one of our previous episodes. We'll put the link in the show notes. But, you know, there's things you want to make sure you have in it as well. Terms and conditions, copyrights, just things to think about.
Find a starting wage and budget. You know, this is like, are you going to charge by the hour? Are you going to charge a fixed price?
Yeah.
There's pros and cons of each one of them.
Yeah. And this is hard to do. I mean, you and I think it was about 6 months ago, we were both kind of hashing back and forth what to charge when we do, you know, independent contracting, for people that we knew. And it's a hard thing to figure out. And, at the same time, like for us, we both had pre-existing customers. So, you know, I didn't want to throw out a price that was too high for them because, I wouldn't mind some extra work, to be honest with you. But at the same time, you need to make sure you're being fully compensated for the amount of work you do at the level you do. You don't want them to be getting, you know, work for free.
Yeah. Usually what I hear is how many hours, how much would it cost to do this? And you're like, well, I don't, how many hours, you know? And it's like, well, how much do you charge an hour? And
yeah,
it's like, well, I don't know how many hours it would be. And you got to kind of figure it out. So
yeah. And so like this one is, you know, the way that conversation could go is you could say, if you decide that you don't want to go hourly, when they say what you charge about, you say, well, no, I look at the whole problem and then just give you a flat bid for, you know, to fully finish what you need me to do, or you could do it hourly. I don't know. It just depends. There's a lot of pros and cons in this article. So, I mean, make sure you check out the link in the show notes. But I tend to go hourly, but sometimes that won't fit in a lot of people's lifestyle because if you are hourly, then your customer assumes that all they can give you work and you'll just charge them by the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're someone that really wants to limit your exposure to work, you know, you can just say, I want to do this in this time frame. That's how much it's going to cost. And, you know.
And then, but the worry there is you could have, you know, scope creep and they're like, well, how many add these features? And at the end, you're like, well, you've added so many features that I can't do it in the same, that fixed hour for this fixed amount.
Yeah, anymore. Exactly.
So there's definitely some pros and cons on each one of those. So check them out.
Mm-hmm. And there's also lots of tools for managing your time and money. Some of the quick ones I see through Less Accounting. A lot of apps that we've talked, Less Accounting, Mint. There's some cool time tracking ones. We talked about Billing Boss for sending invoices. Less Accounting will do that too. But, you know, there's a lot of them out there. A lot of people can, I mean, if you want to pay, you can buy QuickBooks. It'll do a lot of the stuff for you as well. Yeah. The sixth step is to create a resume. And having a good resume is always a good idea, even if you're not self-employed. But it's like understandably, they'll want to know your credentials. You could create a portfolio website that really has no work that you've actually done. But a resume is just sort of just another solidification that, you know, you've done. Even if you say, I worked for this person for X years, you've done it in the past and they know, you know, about it.
Yeah. Maybe it's something you just file off in a PDF. It's not really public. It's just kind of a private resume that you have handy, or maybe it's just like a tab on the top of your website where they can click resume and get kind of a public one, or maybe you could have both, but you should have one.
Yeah. I agree completely. So. And again, you should have one whether or not you're doing, you're self-employed or not. So you need one.
Seven is to find portfolio building clients. You know, this could be, you know, offering pro bono work for somebody that really needs a website. And then you have a chance, you know, maybe you have some free time and you want to build some stuff up because you don't have much projects. Offering something like a pro bono work or something could
be. Pro bono or even really cheap for like a local charity. Mm-hmm. And find someone, you know, you work with that will really be an evangelist for you. Someone that, you know, once you hear that they hear anything about the web, they'll perk up and say, hey, I had this Mark Sanborn helmet. He was great, you know. Yeah. You know, you can, the other things you can add local, you can advertise locally. Yes. Some other really good ideas are like to create, you know, like WordPress templates or freebies so that people, you know, are coming to your site to get those. And then, you know, they can like, well, you know, he's made this really popular web template. So, you know, he'd be good for other work too.
And then once you're done with those projects, make sure you go back and keep in touch with them because those people are going to be the ones that are going to be sending you work.
Yeah.
They're going to say, hey, this guy did this website for me for, you know, good price and he did an excellent job.
Yeah. Where one of my previous jobs, we did some work for a company here in town who really got soaked by what we call the, you know, quote unquote webmaster. They got soaked by someone that charged over, you know, completely overcharged for what they did and really did nothing that great. So we created, you know, a full database backed website for them with, you know, full admin backend and stuff. And they were amazed that we, you know, gave them a better website for a one-time lump cost, you know, for much cheaper, you know, because their old guy was charging them for every edit because there was no back end. So every time they had to call him to change their website, he, you know, charged them 2 hours at a ridiculous rate. And they were just floored. I mean, they were so happy with our work that they went to like a conference 2 months later. And then we got, I think, 12 more clients over the next 2 years because of this person. I mean, they specifically said, we heard this person and we really like your work and it's hard to find people to do this right.
The other thing I wanted to add too is, you know, a lot of times people are like, well, if I don't have a portfolio built up, I only have one website built or I don't have any at all yet. You know, get out there and just do a local charity or something.
Yeah,
get exactly. And put some time into it, make it good. And that's going to be your portfolio piece.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can start building it. Even you don't need to, I mean, just do it for pro bono and then it's going to help you.
Yeah, exactly. And then just, you know, make sure you manage your time and manage your contacts, stay in touch with them. Even if you can with social media, you know, give them a quick little, you know, let them know about, you know, Facebook if they don't and keep in touch because though, again, like you said, those are the people that will be bringing you money. So keep in touch.
They mentioned here in this article to create and stick to a schedule. You know, as a freelancer, you're going to be probably working mainly at home and you're going to have lots of distractions. You're going to want to maybe block out certain times where you only do a certain task to kind of stay on topic. Because working at home can often lead to some distractions and you might not end up getting the work done.
Yeah. So make sure, yeah, exactly. Schedule it and stick to it. Don't let things bleed into it. You know, let people know. You and I run into this a lot when on the weekends when we're doing Face Off, people are like, hey, you should come out and hang out. And, you know, we're like, no, we scheduled to record this weekend. We have to, and we have to stick to that because it's serious to us. And that will translate to your customers too. If they know that you're taking it serious, if they're calling you at home and, I mean, they can hear, you know, kids screaming, or they can hear you, like, you know, watching TV or something like that. That professionalism, transcends throughout your work.
The next one is create a business plan. You know, this is important in any business. You know,
absolutely. If you don't have a plan, you will find that ideas sound so great until you actually have to write them down and think about it. And either you'll write them down and go, yeah, that will pan out, or you write it down and go, oh my goodness, there's no way this is going to work. It's just, things always sound great in your head. So writing it down, not only that, but that gives you something to look at. You say, hey, I did this, and it gives you something to revise later. That doesn't mean you have to stick to that business plan forever, but write it down and think about it. Seriously, think about your day-to-day activity, your expenses, what you're going to be, how you're going to earn money, how many customers you're going to have to get per month to cover your expenses. And it really brings it to life. It really brings it down to ground. All right, Mark, what is the next one?
Know how to get gain recognition. You know, obviously working with social media sites, you know, leaving comments on other blogs, you know, things like
that. Yeah, if you do pro bono work, you know, or even pay work, some customers are really cool about it. If you can put your logo to say, like, you know, you know, designed by so-and-so, you know, that gives you recognition. Like, you and I talk about it. The Media Temple logo, we see it everywhere. They have recognition because it's a simple logo, and they're giving a lot of times free hosting to all these projects, so they advertise on it. And you, I mean,
we even know it was so much that we noticed it.
I didn't know anything about Media Temple until I started looking at all these websites and finally looked it up, and it was actually a contender in the last sort of discussion I had with a client about what to do hosting. So, you know, all that sort of stuff helps. Number 11 is blog often, but pay attention to the quality of your posts. That's great. Again, you need to blog often. You need to be consistent about it. And you need to have good quality posts. You want to make sure you're not putting up junk.
Professionals,
not personal stuff, you know, so that people can know what to expect from you.
The next one is get into the community of freelance web designers. You know, get on the forums, get on the sites that, you know, talk about freelance stuff, leave your comments there.
Go to conferences.
Conferences are great. They can be a little pricey to get to them and to attend, but I hear they're worth it if you start getting into that.
Yeah, some aren't really. If you get into the beat, like, there's one coming to Billings here pretty soon that's, like, not specifically freelance, but web designer stuff. I can't remember the name of it.
There's also a lot of local ones at universities and things that you can sometimes attend.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you're interested in it, get involved with the Linux users group. You know, like, we were talking to Paul Levette, one of the guys we had on the show once. He would like to get, like, a Ruby user group going on in Bozeman. And that's a great place to go find other people.
I think there's actually a Photoshop user group here in Bozeman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow,
I saw that on Twitter, so.
Cool.
So, yeah, they're around, local ones. They might not be as big as a full-blown conference, like, what is some of the web? I can't remember the conferences. Some of the big web.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's South, like, the Web 2.0. Yeah, there's South a lot of them out there. South by Southwest. Yeah. Big Omaha was a cool one that I wish I would have gone to because it was fairly cheap.
WordCamp.
Oh, yeah,
WordCamp. Pretty big one.
I want to go to WordCamp. There's a lot of WordCamp.
But, yeah, there's some local ones, though, that might be smaller, but they're still useful.
Yeah, or, you know, if you want to do, like, a web development group, put an ad in the classifieds or get on these and engage interest. If there is, then you can start it. And that's, again, that's a great resume builder to put on there, that, you know, you founded the, you know, web developer group in Bozeman, Montana. I mean, that's, and especially if it's an organization that grows, then, you know, that looks great.
The next one they say is reinvest the income. Sometimes freelancers are like, oh, I did this work and you know, I should get the money and go and, you know, it's mine. A portion of that money you might want to spend on getting new software, new computers, new office space. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't just blow it all. Be smart with your money, and so that you can, you know, reinvest it in your business and become sustainable, because you never know. In 2 years, that MacBook you bought might not be able to run the Photoshop stuff you need to, and you're going to have to buy a new one, but you blew all your money, you know. So, yeah, be smart with your money and make sure, and just know that you should be reinvesting in your company, because that's what you're making, the company.
So the next one, you know, kind of goes hand in hand with that. Get a professional space. Get somewhere, you know, you're comfortable, but it's something that you call, like, your office, not just your couch and your laptop or something, you know.
Even if you can convert an extra bedroom in your house into an office, so that if you do need to meet with someone, even if they do come to your house, you're taking them to a very professional space that looks like a workspace, so that they know that you're not sitting on the couch watching TV, you know. Be professional.
Yeah. And also as a personal thing, like, I find myself more productive if I'm kind of in an office environment versus just like in my bedroom or something.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. When I go sit in my home office and I say it's go time, I know it's go time. Whereas if I'm on the couch, I'm like, oh yeah, oh cool. You know, King of Queens is on. Oh, Dog the Bounty Hunter's on. Sweet. Oh, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I was programming. And I was like, oh man, they really got that guy with Bear Mace and you know, so get a professional space.
The next one is keep learning new tricks. And I just do this. I just natural, like I love learning new language, computer languages, new design techniques, mm-hmm. new CSS tricks. You know, I just absolutely love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But exactly. Some people, you know, I know PHP and I'm going to stay with that because that's what I like. Just, you know, try the different things.
Yeah. I play really around with it in your spare time. I mean, part of your job, if you are the, you know, founder of a company, is to look at new technologies and to stay on top. Because if you are still running ASP
3.0,
and you know it, they don't even, is that even supported anymore?
I don't think so.
It looks bad, and it's bad for your customer too, because you know you don't want to give them some really old piece of legacy programming, even if it's you a new one that you just wrote.
Behind. Yeah.
And when you investigate things, like if you look into start looking, you know, you and I never wrote with a framework in PHP. But now I'm looking at it, it's like, man, I don't think I could write PHP without a framework now. It'll save you so much time.
Right.
And it'll make you more efficient so you can get more work done in less time and charge money for it. So,
And the other developers can collaborate easier on it because it's a unified system.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, make sure you stay on top of your game. And just again, we've talked about this before, but even if you have a small business, treat it like a business. It's you. It's a reflection of you. So if you know if your business looks sloppy, you look sloppy, and people won't want to hire you because you'll be sloppy. And it just you know, and just keep it seriously. Even though it's a small home business, you know, get a real phone number. Make sure that you know. Be professional in your emails. Don't put little goofy quotes at the bottom that, you know, I hate that.
On the phone number, even if you have to get a Google Voice number and forward it to your home phone number during the day and then just voicemail at night or something, do that. I mean, it's better than not having one.
Exactly. And always, this article talked about it, creating it, but make sure your website is up to date and everything works. Nothing frustrates me more than I go look at some of these really cool websites and I'm like, oh, designed by this local company. Cool. I'm going to go check out their website and it's just old and ugly and it doesn't work. That bugs me so much. It just seems like, why would you trust these people with your web technology when they don't even take care of their own? I mean, they're not even reinvesting in themselves enough to keep their website up to date and working.
Yeah, and it might also be worth your time to go check out your clients, you know, previous clients, and make sure they're still doing okay. Their website's not goofy, and
yeah, absolutely,
you know, something that you've made. You're not obligated to maintain, but by doing so, it gives a better impression for that client, and he might recommend you more if you go and check up on them.
Yeah, they might even say,
"Hey, I want a redesign."
Yeah, exactly.
It's time for a redesign. You can get some work out of it.
Yeah, or even if they're not ready for a redesign, talk about some of the cool new stuff you're doing, and maybe they never even would have thought that they needed an internal productivity web app. You know, sure, you design the web, but maybe they're like, yeah, we're having a really hard time keeping track of our phone calls. You know, there's sticky notes everywhere. And you're like, well, I could, you know, I mean, I could write you a leave a message phone web app in 2 hours and it would save you a ton of time. Well, there you go. There's more work right there. Yep. You need to, exactly. You need to keep into contact. And if you can, you know, maybe give them a little free work once in a while, show them that you care about them. Say, hey, I noticed this was off on your website, so I just went in and fixed it for you. It was like 10 minutes, so I just wanted to let you know I saw that. You know, same thing, check it in, because sometimes they're misusing your technology. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're like, well, you know, I noticed that when you guys are writing, when you're pasting from Word into the text box, it's putting in funky characters. So you know,
quotes. And
yeah, exactly, because you're encoding and stuff. So just check up on them and make them, you know, let them know what's going on. All right. Wow. Yeah, we are not going to get to the second topic. So that about wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. And you can leave us feedback by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can, you know, reply on Twitter, comment on our posts, or leave a voicemail on our phone number.
Remember, we've got
31 Web2 Tech. So we'd love to hear from any of you guys, especially we'd love to hear your voices. So that'd be really cool. And we'll see you next week.